I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. The television personality Bob Bloomer joins me now. He is the host and co-creator of the award-winning television series Glutton for Punishment, which is in its fifth and final season. You can see that on the Food Network in the United States and here on Food Network Canada. Some 30 countries around the world also carry his program. His previous show was A Surreal Gourmet. He's in Vancouver this day with a new book, Glutton for Pleasure, Signature Recipes, Epic Stories, and Surreal Etiquette. It's a colorful book, part memoir, part recipe book, that's lavishly photographed and quite an interesting read. His website for more is at bobbloomer.com. Glutton for Punishment, his fifth book, is published by Whitecap Books. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Bob Bloomer. Good morning, Mr. Bloomer.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Very well.
Did you spend a lot of time in Vancouver?
Yes, I'm here all the time. Several, like maybe 4 to 6 times a year.
Yeah. You grew up in central Canada, though, right?
Montreal.
Yeah. How long have you lived in L.A.?
I've actually lived in the same house for 22 years, but I'm in Canada more than I'm in my house in Los Angeles.
Is that right? Yeah. Why L.A.? I'm just wondering if you...
Because I used to be in the music business, and I was managing Jane Siberry, who was signed to Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, and I kind of just moved down there because it's better to be three miles from the record company and 3,000 miles from the artist as opposed to the vice versa.
That's true, yeah. So this is the last season of Glutton for Punishment, I understand?
It is. We just finished taping the last season, and in that season I attempted to break or establish 6 new Guinness World Records.
Yeah, we had the guy on from the Guinness World Records, I guess whatever you call it, the book or whatever. And he said that you were attempting, so you said 6, right?
Yes, plus I have one. I held one already from a couple seasons back when I broke the record for the most pancakes flipped in an hour.
Yeah, and so you have, I guess, a certificate, do you?
I have several of them, yes.
Yeah.
Who was the guy?
Danny Gurton.
Oh, yeah. What were you interviewing about?
Yeah, but the book, the Guinness World Records, I guess, 2011 book.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
So what did he say about me?
He didn't say anything because he said that he wasn't supposed to because it was part of the show.
Ah.
So can you say whether you broke them or not?
I can't tell you that I broke
no.
all 6
okay. records. No. So we'll just have to watch it then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, when does the show air on Food Network Canada?
It starts in the beginning of the new year.
Ah, okay. And so the last season. I noticed that you guys on that channel, you do a show for 3, 4, 5 years, and then you end it.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's called Quitting While You're Ahead.
Yeah. Maybe you're working on another show now, are you?
I am. I'm working on a show called Weird Restaurants, in which I run around the world checking out all the weird restaurants that exist.
And you still have fun doing TV?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of addictive, actually.
Yeah. Now, you dedicate this book, Glutton for Pleasure, to Mimi. Who's she?
Mimi, who is sadly no longer with us, who was with us when I dedicated the book to her, but sadly died just a few months ago, ran this amazing little breakfast joint in Toronto called Mimi's, and it had 4 booths and, like, 6 stools, but every one of those booths and stools were filled with just the, you know, local artists and musicians, and I mean, she had a chili that she called Blue Rodeo Chili that she named for the band, and they were always in there. In fact, at her memorial service in Toronto just last month, Blue Rodeo reformed in their original lineup, and they've never done that before, as a tribute to Mimi. So she was just a very special person to a lot of people who used to hang out there.
In terms of the meals that one can cook, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what's the favorite for you?
Well, I would take lunch out of the equation because I don't get that excited about lunch. I make salad for myself every day. I love making breakfast, and I love making dinner.
Yeah.
And don't make me pick one.
The recipes in the book cover both, right? We have breakfast recipes and we have dinner recipes, right?
I have breakfast recipes, I have barbecue recipes, I have recipes you can make in a sauté pan in like 10 minutes or less. I have a whole section on my signature style surreal presentations where it looks like a cupcake, but it's actually made from lamb and it's your entree, or it looks like French fries, but it's actually made from pound cake and it's your dessert.
Yeah. And when you serve those at a dinner party, say... What's the reaction?
Well, it depends what I'm serving and who I'm serving it to. I did a party on Surreal Gourmet where I made meatloaf, but I prepared it and presented it to look like it was a birthday cake, and I served it to these kids at a birthday. birthday party, and they started crying when they found out it was meatloaf and not cake. But most of the time, you know, it brings a smile to people's face. And the trick is, it's one thing to be able to present something that looks like a cupcake, but is really made out of lamb. But it's another thing to make it so tasty that after someone laughs at it, that they actually get into eating it and they eat every last bite. So I try and straddle those two worlds of presentation and also, delivering the flavor.
I was having lunch in a restaurant yesterday, and they had the Food Network on one of the big TVs, and I flip by it all the time, and I'll stay if something interesting is being made. And having seen you on TV over the last few years, I've noticed that you look different than you did on, say, the Surreal Gourmet. What accounts for the change, I guess?
That would be the fact that I started taping Surreal Gourmet 10 years ago, so if you look at a picture of yourself from 10 years ago, I'm assuming you would look slightly different, too.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, but the hairstyle and the clothes even changed.
Well, they did, and that wasn't like anybody telling me I have to do this differently or that differently. But, in Surreal Gourmet, I was into this phase where I was wearing pajama tops in my real life and on my show as a kind of form of shirt. And my hair was, I had play hair at the time. And then I started shooting Glutton for Punishment. And in Glutton for Punishment, I do things like run marathons while drinking wine, or tumble down steep cliffs in pursuit of 10-pound wheels of double Gloucester cheese, and it's hard to do those kinds of real life stunts while you're trying to make sure that your hair is in place. So I just cut it off and gave myself one less thing to worry about.
Yeah. Now on Glutton for Punishment, you nearly died a few times, did you?
Well, I nearly died once when I was at the bottom of the ocean. Tried to harvest sea urchins, and it was in a competition to see who could collect the most sea urchins in one tank of air, and I waited far too long, and then by the time I realized that I had no air left, I was tangled in sea kelp, and I had to be rescued by my director, who dropped his camera and swam over and gave me his alternate air source. And then I've had a couple of knee surgeries from the cheese rolling, and put my hand down the mouth of giant catfish and eaten 40 feet of raw, stinging nettles. So I had one true near-death experience, and many that would be close to near-death for anybody else.
What did your family say about all these, eating raw nettles and things like that? I mean, did they think that you were kind of nuts to do that?
Everyone thinks I'm a little nuts, yeah. What's your point?
But you still had fun doing it. You still did it, right?
I have fun doing all of these crazy adventures. It's I'm a true adrenaline junkie, and when I finish one adventure, I just can't wait for the next one to start.
Is weird restaurants as daring, say?
It's not as daring because I'm really traveling around and allowing the audience to see these restaurants through my eyes. So I don't imagine I'll be putting my life on the line except to get to these places. But it's exciting because there's just a lot of crazy restaurants out there, everything from a restaurant in Taipei called Modern Toilet, where all the food is served out of miniature porcelain toilet bowls, to a restaurant in Tokyo where the beer servers are actual chimpanzees, to a restaurant in San Diego where the servers insult the customers. It goes on and on. There's crazy restaurants everywhere.
Yeah. Is there a place in Vancouver that you like going to when you're here?
Oh, there are many. Everything from Go Fish, that little takeout fish joint in the shipping container.
Yeah.
How can you not love Vidge's, Congee Noodle House, Bin 341's. I love all these places. Great town to eat.
Yeah. The in the book there's you talk about bacon, how we all love it but we seem to hate to make it.
Talk about that?
Well, there's a part in the book about bacon, the fish wrapped in bacon, and you also talk about how you love bacon.
I love bacon. I don't think it's hard to make. I use bacon in everything. In fact, I like to make a lot of dishes where I start with just a couple strips of bacon that I cut into little quarter-inch strips.
Yeah.
And then just start the recipe with that. Let the bacon, render, the fat melt, and get a little bit crispy. And then I'll add the other ingredients and coat them with all this luscious bacon and fat.
Is there a secret to making it, though? I mean, some of us don't like making it, but we love eating it.
If anything, I demystify secrets throughout the book. Like, there's really and even in a lot of life, there's not a lot of things just aren't that difficult. It just they can often be presented in ways that make them appear to be difficult. So I pride myself in writing recipes in a way that anybody can follow. In fact, you know, just follow, start at the beginning and get to the end, and then you've made the dish as though I had made it.
We tend to think that being adept in the kitchen means having to have a fully stocked kitchen. Is it?
No, it's exactly the opposite. I mean, making great food is about having great ingredients. You don't need, like, my kitchen, my oven was built in the 40s. My refrigerator was built in the 1950s. My kitchen itself is tiny. But it's all about the ingredients that I use, and that's what makes great food. And the combinations that you put them, you know, you prepare them in.
And so what should we have on hand all the time in terms of ingredients?
Well, it depends what you're making, but you don't, I mean, you know, I give a list in my book of what to put in a well-stocked larder.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have some things in the fridge, some things in your pantry, and some things in your freezer that you can pull out, and it, the better stocked you are, the more easy it is to make spontaneous meals. But there's nothing you have to have. You know, you definitely want to have some olive oils. You want a good olive oil for finishing foods. You want a cheap olive oil for sautéing. Nice to have just a head of parsley in the fridge, and if you have a can of garbanzo beans, you can make a really yummy salad with just with garbanzo beans, chopped up parsley, a shallot, some garlic, a little salt and pepper, olive oil, and a splash of balsamic vinegar, and you've got a beautiful salad. Oh, and some chili pepper flakes. All these things that, you know, most people have in the kitchen.
Yeah. What I also found interesting in your book is the discussion on how to the art of the dinner party. Now, what are some of the tips that you give there?
Well, a lot of people are intimidated by throwing dinner parties, and you know, for me, they're supposed to be sort of raucous events, and you don't want to invite someone who you're going to have to be on your best behavior for. You don't want to invite your boss or your potential mother-in-law. You want to seat yourself beside your favorite guest so that you can have a good time as well. I also invite people who I want to talk to into the inner sanctum of my kitchen when I'm cooking, and that's always a nice way to get some quality time with people. But it's just really, and the other most important thing is don't bite off more than you can chew. Like, if you're a little bit nervous about cooking, then don't, like, make stuff you can make the day before so you're not all nervous about what you're making. I mean, people often forget that guests feed off your energy as much as they feed off your food. And if you seem uptight, they're going to be uptight. If you seem relaxed and you're having a good time, that usually allows your guests to be relaxed and have a good time as well.
Did you enjoy writing this book?
I did. It was really, it was actually an honor and a pleasure because I'm most of the recipes came from my first five books from the 150 episodes of Surreal Gourmet and Glutton for Punishment that I've done, plus my columns. And I looked at all those recipes and picked my very, very favorite ones, and then I retested them, and I rewrote them, and I wrote new introductions based on experiences I've had with them. And it was really kind of a little walk down memory lane for me since I started my accidental career 18 years ago.
So you never worked in a restaurant, right?
No, I'm the poster child for fake it till you make it.
Yeah. And do you get a lot of criticism about that? I mean, having not gone to cooking school, say, or...
Well, everyone loves to take pot shots at television hosts, and some chefs feel that it's not fair that I get to host a television show without having to had to work my way up through the ranks. But I taught myself how to cook, and in the early days, I'm not embarrassed to say that I was a pretty average home cook. But I spent a lot of time in kitchens, either with my friends or I do stages in restaurants for a week where I'll slice and dice and just have the opportunity to see what they're doing, and I learn that way. And so at this point in the game, I fly all over the world and do dinners for people in Abu Dhabi and Slovakia and Singapore. I ran a disposable restaurant in Paris for a week a couple of years ago, and my sous chef was Alain Ducasse's, like, number two guy, and he was working for me. And so I've had lots of experiences, and I'm fairly confident that I hold my own in those circles these days. So, I mean, sure, everyone likes to take pot shots at everyone, so I'm sure there are plenty of people talking behind my back, but that doesn't really worry me at all.
So we buy the book, we can cook like this quite easily then, right?
I'll give you money back guarantee if you if you make more than a couple of recipes that don't work out for you.
Yeah. Bob, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. We'll be looking forward to the last season of Glutton for Punishment and the new show in the new year.
Oh, well, thanks very much.
the website for more, bobbloomer.com. The book is called Glutton for Pleasure, Signature Recipes, Epic Stories, and Surreal Etiquette. It's published by Whitecap Books. It's author Bob Bloomer on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.